AgriTalk is brought to you by Full Scale from Helena. Grow strong returns this season with breakthrough foliar nutrition from Full Scale at Reproduction. The money is flowing around the grain markets, but it doesn't seem to be driving prices anywhere but sideways right now. We are diving, driving, and field working our way into the new growing season, and there are big expectations that volatility will be more than enough to keep that money right here in the ag markets.
Live from a less sunnified Midwest via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This afternoon, we'll talk with Jim McCormick of AgMarket.net. And right after the news, Varsity Joe Vaklovic from Standard Grain. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson, now the host of AgriTalk, Chip Flory.
All right, Davis, thank you so much. Yeah, cloudy out there right now, isn't it, buddy?
The sunification is recedifying, if my view out the window is correct.
Dude, there are 100 people out there looking for a return to normalcy that... are looking to extremely congratulate you for the making up of these wordification things that you're kind of doing thing.
Well, I mean, if the bold new future is going to be differentious, we might as well be differential as well, right? I mean, this is how we will differentiate from the differentiation, you know? I mean, because if you can't identify the differentiational points...
Otherwise, you're just kind of forming to everything that everybody else is already doing.
This is America. We refuse to counterform.
Yes.
I thought we had
a rule here that we weren't going to get into this making up of new words.
You had a rulification. I was not rulified. I'm non-rulified, in fact.
Okay. That's... too bad. We're going to have to do something and evidently get it in writing. Oh, my goodness. Wow. What a day. What a day. Some mixed trade in the corn market with the bull spreads working. We had bull spreads working in the beans as well. Everything closed on the plus side of unchanged. I think that was... on help from the bean oil market. Meal market was mixed. Wheat market mixed with the winter wheat under pressure, but that spring wheat market coming on. It was kind of a crazy day. I'm looking for some clarity from Jim and Joe coming up here in just a little bit. So lots happening. Why don't we go ahead and jump right into it?
Well, Chip, July soft red winter wheat futures are still confined to the boundaries of the March 31 trading range. The new crop contract opened higher, rallied to test resistance at yesterday's high, and turned back to the downside. The low range close sets up a potential gap lower open. USDA rates 53% of the U.S. winter wheat crop in good to excellent condition. Early support for winter wheat prices came from USDA rating a higher than expected 16% of the crop in poor to very poor condition. Yeah. Egypt was back in the global wheat market for the first time in nearly a month. Russia and Romania are expected to get the bulk of that business. July hard red winter wheat, 7¾ cents lower today, 562. July soft red slipped 0.75 cents, 6.12¾ cents. September spring wheat, 5½ cents higher, 6.30 even, Chip.
Yeah, that 16% of the winter wheat crop that is rated poor to very poor, most of that is in hard red winter wheat country, so we're going to watch that very closely.
July corn futures posted an inside trading range and closed off session highs, but still above the opening range. Another round of position evening is expected in the corn market ahead of Friday's supply and demand report, but the smaller than expected corn planting intentions is expected to limit selling interest for at least the next 60 days. Yeah. During that time period, traders will be watching U.S. crop progress, but development of the Safrina corn crop in Brazil will be just as important. May corn futures were a penny higher, 5.54¼. July corn firmed 1¾ cents to 5.41. December corn closed at 4.83¼. That's down 5¼ cents, Chip.
A lot of that Safrina crop was planted late, but the last third of it was planted very late. So that's something again, that's going to have a big impact on which direction these corn prices go in the next 60 days.
Expectations that USDA will tighten the old crop soybean stock situation in Friday's supply and demand report brought support back to the bull spreads in the bean market. Strength in bean oil futures also helped bean futures close on the plus side of unchanged. November soybean futures opened fractionally higher and hit resistance at yesterday's high, stopped the price advance in the overnight session. The contract closed well off session highs, but was still above the opening range. May bean futures 6 cents higher today, 14.18¾. July gained 5¾ cents to close at 14.11¼. November bean futures closed at 12.71¼. That's up 2¼. Chip,
you know, the way that this bean market is acting, and it feels like the bull spreads with the nearbys going up at a quicker pace than the back month, I think most of that is because of position evening, but it feels like that's a demand driven market. And when you take a look at what's going on in the products, it's kind of head scratching, but it feels like a demand driven market again. I don't know, we'll figure it out later.
May cotton, 134 points higher, 79.22. December cotton, up 154, 79.14. Livestocks, strength in the boxed beef market is raising expectations. The packers will increase cash bids by the end of the week. April live cattle up 135 to close at 122.72½. June cattle up 20 cents, 124.62½. April feeders, 2½ cents higher, 146.47½. Snout side, cleaning up market ready hog supplies after the holiday disrupted kill schedule weighed on front month futures. April lean hogs down 30 cents, 102.10. June hogs firmed 2½, 105.62½. Chip.
Yeah, cattle and hog slaughter are both off from the week ago pace, and noticeably off from the week ago pace. So there's some work to do to get over the, like you said, the holiday disruption there. Okay, thanks, Davis. Joe Vack, Levick Standard Grain joins us now. How you doing, Joe?
Doing good. How are you, Chip?
Good, good, good. Are the spreads telling us anything over the past couple of days in corn and soybeans, or is it more noise?
I think some of it's noise, but, I mean, typically on a day like today, you know, bull spreading is positive. Some people would tell you that a rally led by the back end, which we saw a little bit of following that report, is not sustainable. So this is probably a good thing if you're to be friendly to market, I suppose.
Yeah, absolutely. Give me a trend that you like in these grain markets. Pick any of them.
I mean, you look at a new crop corn chart or a new crop soybean chart, and the uptrends, which really, in my view, began in August of last year, those trends remain intact. They look healthy. They're like textbook uptrends that have not wavered at all during that time frame. So from a technical standpoint, I mean, you could get into things like, oh, the market's overbought or the market's oversold or we've got gaps or whatever. But grand scheme of things, you know, over the course of several months now, we've still got a very healthy uptrend in place in both of those markets.
What are you watching most closely the next 60 days, Joe?
I'm really interested in ethanol. I think we're going to see a big rebound in demand for corn via the ethanol industry. Ethanol stocks are really low. They're the lowest they've been in 5 years seasonally. I think this recovery is going to be big. Gasoline demand is going to be back. I think ethanol is going to be back too.
Fantastic. I love hearing that, Joe. Thanks, buddy. We'll talk to you again next week.
Yeah, see you, buddy.
Must be hopping down there in Nashville. I love it. All right. When we come back, we're going to get into a conversation, talk about the expectations for agmarket.net, what everybody there expects going into the end of the week and USDA's supply and demand report for corn and soybeans. That's next. Jim McCormick. Each year, there are billions of bushels of corn out there just waiting to solve the world's most pressing issues like climate change. Demand fluctuates. Exports are unreliable. So how do we use all that corn right here at home to change the world? POET is working hard to ensure reliable domestic demand for ever-increasing corn yields. Not only is the need for clean bio products made from your crops continuing to increase, nationwide adoption of E15 is also on the horizon. This would increase the amount of bioethanol in the nation's fuel supply from 10 to 15%, resulting in a market of almost 2 billion bushels of new corn demand each year. That's 2 billion really good reasons to support biofuels. It's time for farmers and policymakers to unify around E15. Bioethanol is the key to successful agriculture, and successful agriculture can change the world. Learn more at poet.com/ag.
The chickens have come home to roost. Find out whose fence they're perched on today on AgriTalk.
Man, oh man. Davis.
Yes.
I don't know. Joe got excited about it when he was talking about ethanol there for a bit.
He was jubilatorious, if you ask me.
Stop it. We didn't, you know, we went right past the bump music that was playing. We didn't even debate it this time.
I was just going to let it go.
Were you? I didn't feel like I could. I mean,
oh, really?
How do you let something like that go when it's something that we could talk about for, I don't know, the next 30 years or so?
Well, I would say, you know, I could talk about it for the next 50 years myself.
Could you? Wow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's a big move right there. It'll live to be a hundy.
Each year. A little longer
live
each year.
Live to be a hundy. I love it. But Joe did. He got excited about the ethanol and the recovery and driving.
Yeah.
And one of the reasons that I threw that out about Nashville is because I've got some friends that were just there not that long ago, and they're just like shaking their head going, Broadway's back. Broadway is back.
Yeah.
So.
And let me just throw this in. Before the show, I was writing up EIA's short-term energy outlook for April.
Yeah.
EIA estimates global petroleum and liquid fuels consumption increased and will continue to do so through the rest of the year.
Wow. Okay.
So we're actually seeing it in the numbers. That all fuels right. consumption is up.
All right. Well, cool. You know what that means? We should probably try to get Jordan Fife from BioErgia on and talk about what he sees coming for the energy markets, gasoline, fossil fuel markets, and specifically for the ethanol market.
I got a better idea. Let's not get the cart in front of the horse. Let's get to Jim McCormick. He's standing by. We've already got a guest for today's show.
Okay.
Let's play the cards we've been dealt right now, but we can talk about that Fife thing later.
Excellent. Excellent. Love that. Jim McCormick, agmarket.net. How you doing, Jim?
Good, guys. Thanks for having me on. Appreciate it.
Glad you're here. Glad you're here, man. The expectations that you guys over there at agmarket.net heading into the end of the week and the April supply and demand report, I don't know if your message is that much different than a lot of people, but boy, you guys are telling it loudly that USDA just hasn't caught all the demand that's in the market, right?
That's exactly right. We're just like Joe Vaclavic. We're very friendly on the ethanol side of the equation. The government has the ethanol demand about 4.950. We think it ought to be at least 5 at a minimum. You're bringing on a couple big ethanol producers that essentially, if they go to full capacity, they'll be using 100 million bushels of corn if they do ramp up to full capacity. So when you look at us, the economy expanding, world growth expanding, that number can't but go up. And then you look at the export number, Chip. You look at the corn. Yeah. Right now, we have sold essentially 99.5% of the government's anticipated export number with 5 months to go. Normally, we're around 75%. So how does the government not raise that number as well? So when you raise the exports and you raise the ethanol number, you're going to see that drawdown in the ending stock. And then on top of it, the feed number, the first and second quarter feed numbers were essentially record levels. So it's going to take kind of record level pricing move higher to ration out the demand. Otherwise, the feed number is too low. So when you combine all those in, we don't see how the government does not lower that ending stock. We're guessing close to 1.35 in April. We think it'll go even lower when we get toward the latter part of summer.
Okay, so 1.35 for April. That's
correct.
Interesting, because I know that there are some that are thinking 1.35, maybe a 1.2 final, and I mean a 1.2 billion bushel, of course, final carryover estimate, but that is a number that we wouldn't, and I don't think there's many that are thinking 1.35 that USDA will make that move at the end of the week. Jim, if they do make that kind of a move, what's your expectations for this corn market?
Well, if they do that, what that does is that gets your stocks to use levels down to the 8-9%, plain and simple. When you look historically, when you get those stock levels that low, you kind of extrapolate it out. It argues July corn should make a move to $6, plain and simple, and should pull the December corn probably somewhere around the 5.25. If there, you know, when you just look at historically what it took to ration demand when your stocks of use fell as low as they potentially could, if that carryout does drop toward that 1.2, 1.3 level.
Yeah. Okay. So if we get to 1.35 or even down further, 1.2, and we take a look forward out to the 2021-22 marketing year. We've already got the lower-than-expected planting intentions report from USDA, and we'd be tightening up the supply-side cushion going into the growing season, Jim. I mean, that's all the ingredients that you need for a lot of volatility in the new crop market too, right?
Oh, I think it's incredibly volatile potentially. I mean, if you make those adjustments, raising the feed and residual number by 50, raising the ethanol by 50, and exports by 200, you're essentially got a demand for the old crop at about 14,925,000. Think of it this way, Chip. You plant 91.1 million acres of corn. You harvest 83.6 because you don't harvest everything you plant. We magically hit a trend yield of 179.9. That's just a shade over a 15 billion bushel crop. So record yield. Current acreage estimate, you got about a 15 billion bushel crop. That's what, 75 million bushels higher than the current demand estimate.
Yeah.
And here's the thing that makes it crazy. That record yield, 179.9, that previous record was 176.6. So what are the odds we actually can hit that record yield when you look at where we're planting corn?
Right.
And what I mean by that, the I-State lost corn acres, and we picked it up in the Dakotas. We had a net change of these corn acres. When it was all said and done, it wasn't really shocking. It was only about 325,000 shift in acres from last year to this year on these acreage numbers. But the bulk of those acres, we saw a 2 million acreage increase in North and South Dakota, and we lost it in the I-States. And we all know, unfortunately, the ground in North Dakota just cannot produce the same type of corn yield that the I-States do. So it is really going to be a stretch, we believe, to hit that record yield.
Okay. So we've brought all kinds of uncertainty and potential for volatility into the new crop market. Talk to me about managing risk, and if you want to start with the old crop, that's great, Jim. But we got to focus on this 2021 crop, corn specifically right now. How do we manage the risk in this market?
Well, right now we've been around 20-25% sold is where most of our customers are kind of recommending being at. But for every bushel sold, if you're doing in the cash market or the futures market, we're recommending going out and at least buying like some August short dated calls. That will give you at least some re-ownership into kind of the heat of the summer. If you don't want the margin risk, Chip, or you're just kind of worried about getting too forward sold in the cash market, use the same time frame, the August short dated option, but just buy a straight put, which will give you a floor. Now, I understand you're paying a lot of money for the premium at this point in time because of the volatility, but you're also locking in some dollars that you cannot, you know, it's unfathomable where, you know, when you think about where prices are today compared to where they were a year ago when we were starting planning. So those are our two recommendations.
Yeah. Okay. I got you. And I mean, you're exactly right. It's that 420 was the number that everybody was talking about. Just give me 420 so that I can do some risk management around that level in the DEES 21. Well, you've got that plus, and you got a heck of a good basis to go along with it because of the tight supply situation that we're talking about. The other element that's going to bring some volatility or could bring some volatility into the corn market in the summer, of course, is weather. What are you guys, you can't go to the bank on a weather forecast. I understand that. I don't even think you can build a marketing plan or a risk management plan on a weather forecast, but what are you guys expecting?
I mean, right now, like I said, we're not weather forecasters, but we do talk to a lot of different weather forecasters and climatologists. And I would say the vast majority we talk to are saying that the modeling they're getting currently is they're looking for kind of a warmer, drier bias this summer, and especially in the northern plains. you know, where the drought is really kind of raging. So the weather's going to be touch and go, but that's, you know, when you look at how tight these ending stocks are, like I said, you know, to hit trend yield just to meet the anticipated demand, that is why we think it's so critical to, you know, and put your marketing hat on and lock in these dollars. They're phenomenal dollars for acre you're locking in, but spend some of that locked in dollars to own calls, because if we turn dry, we could go into a rationing mode that, you know, the real question, Chip, is how do you ration demand, in my opinion? We all talk about it. We just got to go up and ration demand. How do you convince an ethanol guy to ration demand if the price of gas is going up because the economy's ripping higher? You know, how do you ration demand out of livestock? I mean, just becomes a huge problem. Not to mention, we're going to be competing with the Chinese as well as their economy continues to grow.
Yeah. Well, the only way that you can do it, I understand that was somewhat of a rhetorical question, but the only way that you can do it is to take the margin out of it, just completely out of it, and make it so that they lose money by processing corn. And that's got to be on top of all the fixed costs. That's got to be on top of everything, that it just makes more sense to shut down than to continue processing. And let's put it this way. You don't put up a hog building to let it sit empty, Jim, do you?
No doubt about it. That's the problem. Right now, these end users, Chip, are really getting aggressive. I mean, I had a customer in southern Indiana today got offered essentially a cash equivalent price of $5.90 corn if he could get that new crop corn delivered in the first half of September. $5.90
cash. Let's talk more about that. That's a heck of an opportunity. We need to run the same scenario on soybeans. We'll do that next with Jim McCormick from AgMarket.net. It's time for Headline News, featuring some of the headlines ripped from Pro Farmers First Thing Today. No changes to Pro Farmer consultant South American crop forecast, but he does have a negative bias on production levels down there, especially that Safrina corn crop. The crop condition index rating improved from last fall for the HRW crop, but declined for the SRW crop. Demand for wheat at Chinese auctions perks up versus last week's poor showing. 39.5% of the wheat offered was actually sold. Cleveland Federal Reserve Bank president is encouraged by the March jobs report, but says more progress is needed. Senate parliamentarian allows reconciliation strategy for the infrastructure effort. Democrats push for higher taxes on global firms, and Democrats still need moderate members of the party on upcoming infrastructure vote. Try profarmer.com.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors.
AgriTalk is brought to you by Dallaro Complete. Keep your operation moving forward with Dallaro Complete from Bayer.
AgriTalk! AgriTalk!
Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm Chip, got Davis with me, and we are having a conversation with Jim McCormick from AgMarket.net. Before we get back to Jim, go ahead and recap how the market's closed.
Chip, July hard red winter wheat 7.75 cents lower today at 5.62. September spring wheat 5.5 cents higher, 6.30 even. May corn futures were a penny higher, 5.54 1/4. December corn closed at 4.83 1/4. That's down 5.25 cents. May soybean futures were 6 cents higher, 14.18 3/4. November bean futures closed at 12.71 1/4, up 2.25 cents. May cotton 134 points higher today, 79.22. April live cattle gained $1.35 to close at 122.72 1/2. April feeders 2.5 cents higher, 146.47 1/2. And June lean hogs firmed 2.5 cents, 105.62 1/2. That's your quick market recap. Now back to you, Chip.
All right. Thank you so much, Davis. Jim McCormick, AgMarket.net. Jim, we got a couple of questions that came in on Twitter. I want to get to those before we jump too far, because I think it'll lead us into some of the things that we were going to talk about anyway. This one is from @BarryJ_33. Do you think that we will meet the trend size crop for corn and soybeans? Now, we talked a little bit about corn, and I love what Barry's bringing to the conversation on this. He says, with the hikes in prices of fertilizer and shortages of fertilizer and chemical, you know, the input side of this market, Jim, looks a whole lot different than it did last fall, doesn't it?
Oh, it definitely does. I mean, the guys that bought it in the fall look really smart. You know, definitely it paid. You know, if you look at it, that's why I think, you know, when you look at what's going on and a lot of the bean acres getting planted, that's what you're going to see. And, my opinion right now, I think it's going to be very tough to get trend on both of them just because of the input costs for the fertilizer on the corn. And then just the weather aspect. When you look, well, like we mentioned in the first segment, although corn acres, big increases in the Dakotas. If you look at the bean acreage increase, it was in the Dakotas. Where is the drought the worst right this moment? The Dakotas.
In the Dakotas. Yeah, yeah. Is it too, you know, Jim, it just feels to me like it's too late, given what's going on with, like, what Barry said here, the rise in fertilizer prices and everything. It just feels too late to add to the mix. Yeah, I know the total or the combination of corn and soybean acres came in well below the trade expectations. But if that number is going to change much, the incentive would have had to have come by now, wouldn't have it?
I believe so. And like I said, a lot of people look at the corn and bean number, but what we looked at is look at your total of all your major crop acres. It came in about 252.5. Last year is 245. The year before that, 239. So when you take everything, corn, sorghum, barley, oats, soybeans, canola, almost all the acres are accounted for. So one thing, Barry, is if we do pick up a couple million acres of corn, you're going to lose it where? From the beans. And then the bean balance sheet's going to get obscenely tight, or vice versa. If we lose corn because of the high fertilizer and goes to the beans, you know, we're not, like I pointed, it's going to be very hard to meet demand with the current acreage, or we got to have a phenomenal yield, and that just doesn't seem like it's in the cards unless the weather just is perfect from here on out.
Yeah, yeah. And if we're going to move any acres over to corn, the co-ops better do a better job of keeping the gas in front of these guys. I mean, they're hitting it for a couple of days, and then all of a sudden you can't get nitrogen. You can't get anhydrous. Davis, are you hearing that? You picking that up out there too?
I haven't heard anything about that specifically, but it is kind of the way things have gone the past few years, it seems like.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. It's not
and
like it,
and in our
there.
Area, it's early yet. It's early yet. We could still see a run. We're in the boom time right now.
Yeah, it is early, but it's not like these the fertilizer and suppliers or your co-op is sitting around with a huge inventory like they did a dozen years ago. They just they don't operate that way anymore. So if you want it, you had better have had it booked for a while in here. Okay, speaking of anhydrous and acreage and all of that, Jim, here's one from at Farmer Bob NWMO. Be careful, Bob. I saw that frostbite. His question is, if you took 15 to 20% of the poor to very poor hard red winter wheat, how many acres would that be and could be switched to some other crop? I'm not asking you to do the math, but he brings up a good point that if the stands on that HRW crop are a bit sketchy, they could go to a sorghum or they could go to soybeans or something like that yet, couldn't they?
You could get a shift in some of that right there. I mean, and heck, it's not even the hard way. I mean, when you look at the price of beans and corn, there is actually debates that we've talked to several customers in the Midwest, parts of Missouri, Indiana, and Ohio that are thinking, should I rip up my soft red wheat and plant corn or beans? Now, I've been, you know, I don't know what they should. I always tell them you got to talk to agronomists. But one thing I can assume, Chip, is we're probably going to see the most amount of double crop beans we've ever seen in our life. I think if there's any opportunity, I think even the guys will even push it as far as north of I-80. It may be a push, but when you look at the price of beans and how tight everything is, I think a lot of guys are going to say, why not try if they can get this wheat off early?
Yeah, yeah, interesting. Yeah, it's always a tough decision when your cash crop becomes a cover crop. And you decide to rip up winter wheat in favor of some other crop. And the stand, I would argue, has to be sketchy. Otherwise, you got to give that crop an opportunity to finish off and generate the revenue that it can. And then you follow it up, like you said, Jim, with double crop beans or something to add to the bottom line there. But that's something, that's another good one at Farmer Bob that we need to pay very close attention to. We've talked about the tight situation on corn, Jim. Talk to me about soybeans. I mean, what is carryover really going to be at the end of the 2020-21.
What's the carry going to be, Chip? It's going to be. It's all going to depend on how many beans can they get moved from Brazil to the United States. Plain and simple, that's going to determine our ending stock.
So where do they come into? They come into the Southeast?
They pretty much come into the Southeast is where they're coming into. And what I mean by that is the current ending stock number is guessed at 120 million bushels. We're importing 35 million this year. A normal year, we import around 15 from Canada. So that's where the government's already dialing in 20 million. So that's where you're not getting much of a change in these ending stock estimates for Friday's report, because people say, well, we need to raise the exports for beans. And I agree with that. But what the USDA will probably do is they'll raise exports by 20 million and they'll just raise imports by 20 million and keep that carry out right there at 120 million. The real question then becomes, Chip, is can we actually get 40 million bushels of beans from the Brazilians, or are they going to sell or should be able too busy shipping them all to the Chinese? It becomes a loadout question
all
into
right.
the latter part of summer.
You know, I think we may have lost Chip.
Seems like something may have happened to Chip. Yeah.
Jim,
are you still there?
I think I lost Chip. I hear you guys.
Yeah. Well, Jim, I guess on the subject of China taking Brazilian beans, I feel like we got to look at ASF. I was in the news this morning, a dead hog apparently washed up on Taiwan. I mean, if dead hogs are floating in the sea down there, they've probably got a bigger problem than what they've let on.
Yeah, and imagine that, them trying to hide their problems.
Right?
We've seen this movie multiple times. But no, I think it is a problem. But if you look at what happened even in the apex of their swine flu problem a couple of years ago, their feed demand never really did drop, because what happens is all those producers, they just moved away and started feeding chickens or something else. They've got so many people to feed. It's just like, fine, if I can't feed a hog, I'll feed a fish. Right. I'll feed a bird. And I think you're going to do it. But that is going to have a little bit of an impact on the overall demand. But in general, you know, China's got a lot of people to feed. The one thing is their biosecurity is getting better. They're moving away from the smaller farms to the more cooperative farms, and that's just bringing in more modernized feeding type programs, which is just overall bullish the demand for feed.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, really interesting stuff, Jim. Go ahead. Finish up.
I was going to say, the one other interesting thing on the beans, I was just going to point out, you know, the total use this year is about $4,575,000,000. You take the government's 87.6 million acres, the yield of 50.8, that total production is a 4,408. We're going to produce less beans than we consume this year.
And
so we're
that
not
combination,
without a record yield.
That combination rarely works to rebuild supplies and especially to get to a burdensome level. Jim, put a timeline on the potential for profitability. And what I'm talking about is it's not just for this year. It's not just for the 21 crop. It feels like the 22 crop and maybe even the 23 crop are going to have profit potential. I'm not saying high prices during that entire period. I'm just saying that there's going to be enough uncertainty to give us an opportunity to lock in a profit. How do you see that?
I would agree. I mean, if you look at all things equal, you know, it's going to take a while to really build back the stocks, which keep us profitable, assuming everything goes right. Now, we saw what happened last year with the pandemic. Everything can just fall apart instantaneously. So what we like to tell our customers is, look, you know, don't get caught up in just selling this Dec 21 corn. If you can sell Dec 21 corn, I say between 5 and 6 and you're out, then you work on the 22 corn. And then keep doing it. Because one thing we do know historically is the higher prices go, the world is going to continue to expand. The South Americans are going to start planting even more and more and more. And eventually you will ration that demand. You know, the end user finds cheaper inputs and the supply increases and eventually you get the break. We saw that after the 2012 drought. It does happen. And it usually happens quicker than people assume it will.
Great conversation, Jim. Man, thank you so much. Really appreciate you taking the time for us. And, man, we've got the potential for some fireworks coming out of the report on Friday. I'm looking forward to seeing it. Thanks, man.
Thank you for having me. Have a good week.
You bet. That's Jim McCormick, agmarket.net. If you're looking for him on Twitter, it's agmarket_net. We'll be back with more AgriTalk here in a moment.
Never miss a story. Text NEWS to 31313 to have today's top stories delivered to your phone.
All right, welcome back. I'm Chip. Got Davis with me. Man, Jim covered a lot of ground there, didn't he?
He really did. Yes, sir.
Yeah. The bottom line as we go into this growing season is that given the makeup and the location of the acres and the, you know, just everything, that all the challenges that we're facing going into the 2021 growing season, it's going to be difficult to produce crops big enough based on the acreage intentions. It's going to be difficult to produce crops big enough to turn the situation negative. Now, keep in mind, about a year ago, we were sitting here thinking, man, there's no way that we can't produce enough corn and soybeans to keep this in a really negative profit outlook going into the next couple of years. And look at how quickly that changed.
What if the pre-planting intentions report expectations were actually correct? What if USDA undershot intentions and we actually do wind up with, 93.2 million
more?
Fill in the blank. Yeah.
Call it 2 million
more. About 2 million
more
each. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So basically.
Does that do it?
Just round to 90 on both of them. So you're adding 180 million bushels, right?
Mm-hmm.
Something like that on, well, no, that isn't right. No, two million.
Just ballpark it.
Yeah. right. 2 million at call it 200 bushel, you're adding 400 million bushels total. Okay. Does that change the corn outlook dramatically? Well, if we're down at a 1.2 at the start of the year and we're going to be a trend line yield would give you just at the prospective planting number would give us just enough to cover anticipated use in the 21-22 year. Mm. Yeah, I mean, it gets you from the potential for a 1.2 billion bushel carryover to a 1.6. Well, a 1.6 billion bushel carryover projection would not take away the opportunity to lock in a profit because it would maintain enough production uncertainty for the following year that you can't let the acres get away. So the market has to offer enough incentive to hold on to the acres that it can for 2022. Okay? Mm-hmm. So it's a little bit of tug of war and it's a little bit of pushing a rope and trying to figure out exactly how this all plays out, man.
Mm-hmm.
Really is. But the multiple year, locking in profits for multiple years, Jim brought that up and he brought that after he said, listen, if we get to the point that we have to really hurt demand. So in other words, the prospective planting report was right. Not only was that right, we've got a production issue and we don't hit 179, we hit 169. Take 1.5 billion bushels off the crop, something like that. No. Take 450 million bushels off the bean crop. Jeepers, scrimmy, that would hurt. Mm-hmm. You do things like that, then you have to cause some demand destruction, which means taking prices high enough to accomplish that, to remove all the margin, to encourage somebody to not fill up a hog house.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, like I said, you don't put up a hog house and leave it empty. You put it up to raise hogs in. But if we get to that point where we are destroying even feed demand, it's going to be offering, the markets will be offering opportunities that you're going to have to look at multiple year. You're going to have to look at locking in prices for multiple crop years. And that basically is the definition of that long tail on a bull market.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you run, the 2020-21 bull markets that we've seen in corn and soybeans, it's one of the strangest combinations of, you know what, the crops just weren't exactly what we thought they were, and oh my goodness, China did come in and buy. So it's a right. combination of...
That's my concern.
Mm-hmm. It's a combination of supply-driven and demand-driven. If it's demand-driven and continues to be demand-driven, yeah, you can get to the point that you have to take prices high enough to shut it down, to shut it down. But if it's just, quote-unquote, just a supply scare, after you've made that run up to those high prices, your tail off of that high can be very, very long. I mean, we went through one, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Coming off of that 2012-13 high. An exceptionally long tail. Now, the first couple of years out of it, we still had opportunities for profit because there was enough supply-side uncertainty to keep it going, to keep profits available, not to maintain the bull market, but to maintain profitable pricing opportunities. That's the kind of scenario that Jim just laid out for us. It was a great conversation. Yeah. You got to maintain your pricing flexibility that we've talked about 100 times on here, and you do that until you don't have to.
Yep. Well, and you can't go approaching this season when you're talking about profitability from the same point you did last season or the season before with $400 anhydrous, $450 right. anhydrous, even $500 anhydrous. That's put the whole thing into flux as well.
That's very true. Very true. You know, we're going to have to spend more time on that and look further mm-hmm. out into the 22 crop year, 23 crop year. Well, and
you
what
talk
that
about
might
long tail,
like
look at fertilizer prices.
You darn right. You darn right. Right. All right, for Davis and producer Big Apple Joe Stackler, thank you so much for listening today. Tomorrow morning, we've got Dr. Jim Mintert talking about the Ag Economy Barometer. We've got Vic from Iowa. We got Gary from Illinois in a farmer forum. And tomorrow afternoon, Mac Marshall from the USB right here on AgriTalk.